Welcome back to The Comixologist. Coming to you not live from New York City, it's K-Zam and special guest Jay Keith, because Slim's on vacation and left us all.
Have fun, Slim. Thank you for not being here.
So, living legend Jay Keith, been talking already about you on the show for a while. All started back at San Diego, where we had many misadventures. And now you're actually here, and our audience actually gets to meet you. So hello and welcome.
Thank you, Kara.
So Jay Keith is part of the team Comixology that works on setting the guided view for you in your books. Because she, like the other members of the team, are trained artistes.
Artistes. That's what it says on my diploma. Accent.
So when you're doing all this fancy guided view stuff, what is it that you're trying to accomplish for the readers?
Especially as an artist, I want to preserve the original intent of the work. So when I'm going through, because I have the best job of getting to look at comics all day, is I'm cropping out parts of it to make sure that you can read it on a tablet or a phone without losing any of the important work. And guiding you through the page. It's really good. Like you've talked about, you read mostly guided view, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of guided view because if I don't use guided view, I tend to ignore the art, but that's not my fault. It's just I was born this way.
Lady Gaga song. Kara's theme song. That's another reason. It's especially newer readers who aren't familiar with the language of comics and how pages flow. I think it helps. It mm-hmm. helps put them through the story too. But really, I just get to make sure that you get to read comics without losing the page itself.
But let's get down to business because we're here to talk about comics. So let's go through what came out this week. A lot of exciting things for me, especially as a Star Wars fan. We've got Journey to Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire. There's a new issue of The Walking Dead, Suicide Squad. There's a new Wicked and the Divine.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Harley Quinn Road Trip, A-Force, Gotham Academy, Bitch Planet, Miss Marvel, Swords of Sorrow. This is my week, guys.
It's a really good week.
This is really my week. There's a new, Marvel's doing this 50 Years of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, and there's a Quake one shot out. Amazing. New issue, Letter 44, Ninjak, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, love me some TMNT. New Doctor Who. You've been reading those Doctor Who comics? Those are actually pretty great.
I've seen a few.
Oh, I'm such a big fan. Oh, New Sleepy Hollow, Usagi Yojimbo Saga, Volume 4. This is just the best week. Oh, Deadly Class.
So good.
Phonogram, The Immaterial Girl, Number 2. I'm going to be reading all day. But what did you read, Jay Keith? What did you read today?
I got to read a little bit of everything, luckily for my job, because I get to see it all, which is great.
Jealousy. Seething.
Sorry. But I had a few favorites this week. I've got Tyson Hess's Diesel Number 1.
Ooh.
It's so good. I've actually
what
been...
What is that? How would you describe Diesel?
There's this girl named Dee Diesel, and she's a fledgling engineer on Peacetown, which is a mobile garage that her dad left her in a will, which she gets when she turns 18. She turns 18 tomorrow in the comic, so happy birthday to Diesel. She wants to be captain, but mostly she just wreaks a lot of havoc. It's what she's better at than actually doing any captainy stuff. And she can also build up a static charge better than like wool socks in a carpet. Like, I don't know what it is. Huh. That's just kind of revealed. Like, she has this static thing that's going on. And all she wants is adventure, but she's about to get more adventure than she knows what to do with. So we'll see how Dee does. I don't want to spoil anything. It's issue number 1.
So obviously a great place to jump in.
Obviously. Honestly, I would say the best place to jump in would be number 1. I like her a lot because I get static shocked, so I relate to her already. She's also got this robot sidekick named Ricketts, who's adorable.
It sounds adorable with
so
a name
cute.
Like Ricketts.
I know.
You know, that's maybe not something you want to actually happen to you. The name is still...
But the robot, it fits for him. He's this old, rusty little thing.
Oh.
It actually makes me think of that Disney film, Treasure Planet.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of that aesthetic to it.
I recently rewatched that, and it's a great film.
It's so good. I mean, because Tyson's work, I don't know if you're familiar with Tyson. He actually went to school with me, so I knew him ahead of time.
Ooh, name drop.
I know. So magical, legendary. But, I mean, his comedic timing is hilarious. His facial expressions, his art, all of his characters are very active and animated.
Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of thing that you're looking for when you're looking for comics to read? Does the art, like, leap out at you as a motivator for getting a book, or does it depend?
I'd be biased, and it totally does. It's the very, like, judge a book by its cover kind of approach. But because I've done both, I'll pick up like a random issue of a book I'll see just because the art grabs me. It's something that I want to look at for inspiration, and it'll be issue number 3 and I'll have no idea, but it's beautiful anyway. And then there's books that the art isn't necessarily my cup of tea, but I get so into the story that it doesn't matter to me anymore. So there's still something I can get from it.
Speaking of getting into the story, I got way into the new Star Wars comic today.
Surprise! No surprise.
In a shocking plot twist no one saw coming, I was super into the new Star Wars comic. We had a Darth Vader comic drop today, but also Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, which, as everyone who has met me for longer than 30 seconds knows, is like my life right now.
Kara's on her own journey to Star Wars.
It's really painful. There's a lot happening. I actually went to the midnight opening of the Toys R Us in Times Square for Force Friday. Oh wow.
How was it? Is it?
It was hot and muggy, and some people brought their small children, and I was like, this can't be right. This is very hot outside.
At midnight?
At midnight. I finally got up to the toys at 1 a.m. and there were all these people with like these giant bags of stuff, like just all these toys that they were buying. And I just went right for the, like,
scoped it out.
I went right for the Captain Phasma action figures. I had a mission.
You fought some small children. You pushed them aside.
It was more like pushing aside. There was like some French tourists behind me, and like I was elbowing them out of the way. No, I was very kind. And like all the staff were like shockingly kind for like such an intense crowd.
They've been training for weeks.
Yeah, I actually won a Yoda flashlight by answering a trivia question correctly.
What was the question?
One of the employees, like, she looked so smug. She was just like so clearly excited to stump me with this question. She said, "What is Chewbacca's home planet?" And I was like, "Kashyyyk." Like, obviously, doesn't everyone know
who
that?
Who do you think you're asking?
I was wearing my Boba Fett dress from her universe, and so I looked down and I looked at her. I'm like, "What did you think was going to happen here?" Anyway. So the comic, it takes place just at the end of Return of the Jedi during that like epic space battle. The rebels are taking their like last stand against the Empire and the second Death Star. And we're just thrown into the middle of that battle, but following the journey of one of the star pilots instead of the main cast that we're used to for the film. And what I like about this comic is that it's taking you from that moment that Star Wars fans will know so well, but it carries you past the credits almost. Like, I reached a part in this comic where I was playing the credit music in my head because I knew that's what happened next, but I'm like, wait, no, because in real life, you don't have credits. It just keeps going. So this carries you into the transition period between that movie and The Force Awakens, and I thought it was very well done. I'm just so excited for this movie. But I've been reading all of the Star Wars comics, and I genuinely think this is the best number one issue that I've read out of all of them. But it could also be that I just put some more Star Wars action figures on my desk and I'm riding that high, but I just wanted you all to know. You heard it here. This is my favorite one so far. But what else did you read?
Chrononauts came out. We call it Chrononauts Volume 1, which gives me hope for more. But, you know, if there's not, it's still really well self-contained. This has actually already been out. It's 4 issues. This is just the trade collection. You might like this, actually. It's because it's very bromance. It's 2 I could almost say science bros.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. They are geniuses, and they basically create time traveling suits.
Okay.
And they're going to go back in time for science, because that's what you do.
That is what one does.
And their plan is just to record a little bit, like a scene, and then come back to the present and say, hey, look, we recorded this cool thing and science happened. But that's not what happens. It never happens with time travel. Time travel will never be that easy. And from the very beginning, things go crazy. And I would say, you won't believe what happens next is my clickbait description of this book. But needless to say, there's a lot of antics of different time periods crossing over, which is something I love. Anytime you can see like samurais with tanks is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely recommend it. Like if you like those Doctor Who comics that Kara talked about, and you want some more timey-wiminess.
Yes.
I would definitely go with Chrononauts for some sweet bromance time travel in action.
I'm sold. Oh, I'm ready to read it.
And I got to say, the writer on that is Mark Millar, which you might recognize from Kick-Ass.
Everything.
This little title, you know, it's been around. And then Sean Murphy is on art. And I've loved Sean Murphy's work for a really long time. He also did like Joe the Barbarian. He recently did his own book, Punk Rock Jesus, which is gorgeous. But his work is from even the art perspective, purely on that book is gorgeous.
I got to tell you, after I read this Star Wars comic, I said, I want more of space and space adventures. And then I saw that one of our mutual favorite comic books came out this week.
Oh,
Star Trek Green Lantern, number 3.
I was waiting for it.
So J. Keith is actually the person who told me to read this book. And thank you for that.
Told everyone.
Told the world to read this book. It's the crew of the USS Enterprise meeting up with Hal Jordan and some of his space buddies to go and do just so far, just kind of like hanging out. Like members of the crew have some of the power rings, some of the Green Lantern power rings. In this issue, Chekhov's just like testing out his ring by flying around in outer space with a jetpack that he made. Ah, precious baby.
Don't get me started on Bones. Oh, God.
Bones has one of the indigo rings, right?
Yes.
So that's the ring for compassion. And like, what a great fit. What a great fit for what a gruff, great guy.
He's handling it pretty well, I guess.
He's just like, my training didn't cover this, but I'll scan this body. Fine.
Sure. Why not, Jim?
Yeah. But everything's not all sunshine and daisies, because we got a red ring, a yellow ring, and an orange ring going off to other various places of the Star Trek Empire with some not so savory characters being the recipients. And I assume chaos will ensue, but at the moment I'm just really enjoying the crew of the Enterprise having superpowers all of a sudden.
Honestly, I would read an ongoing where they did nothing but just had the rings and had to like figure them out the time.
There's this one great panel in this issue where Captain Kirk turns to Hal Jordan. He's just like, well, Mr. Jordan. And Hal's like, ahem, Captain, I am a captain just like you. And then Kirk's like, must we?
Captain off.
Genius. But
it's only going to be 6 issues, though. I'm sad. We're already halfway done.
Ah. Well, you know, if the 3 issues that I've read so far have been this magical, I look very much forward to the next 3.
I actually really like that they didn't make Kirk get a ring. The fact that other people did, but Kirk didn't, is probably one of my favorite choices for that book.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have him kind of not be like the main
guy. All about Kirk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love Kirk. Don't get me wrong.
We all love the Kirk-Spock power hour, but sometimes you need to let the other characters shine.
It's nice.
Yeah. If Kirk had a ring, what ring do you think it would be?
It'd be green.
It would be green.
Of course.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he doesn't have one, because then he'd have to fight Hal.
Yeah.
And then it would just get a little... It would. I don't even know. Who would even win that?
I'd read it.
But let's get down to business. To defeat the Huns, but also to talk about comics.
If you didn't, I had to.
So I asked J. Keith on this show today because she is our in-house Green Arrow expert.
It's on my other diploma.
So, and since the new season of Arrow is fast approaching us, I thought that we might have you on the show to talk about where people should start with Green Arrow if they're not familiar with the character.
This podcast is about to get a lot longer.
So, for what is it about Green Arrow as a character that appeals to you?
Well, I was biased because I read superheroes growing up, and I watched like Batman the Animated Series and the X-Men 90s cartoon, of course. But I kind of fell out of them when manga hit the scene for a really long time. And in college, I went to the library and I happened to pick up this one book, Green Arrow Quiver, which I was just kind of giving superheroes a chance at the time. And it served as an introduction. It showed me Ollie as not just a superhero, but really just a guy. I love how he fights for the little guy.
That's a quote from Justice League Unlimited.
Really?
He goes, what about the little guy?
Oh, no. Obviously a big fan. I didn't even think about it. So when Superman goes off, or like even Batman they all go off planet and they're fighting all these massive aliens. But Ollie is still like at home on the street, you know, watching out for people that are living in the alleyways. He's watching out for everyone. He's got Black Canary beside him, who's kicking butt and helping women and birds of prey. He covers a lot of not even just a quiver, but he covers a lot of social issues, a lot of which, even though it was made decades ago, is still really relevant to today. And also, he has a really sweet Van Dyke and
his little beard.
Soapbox, really quick. A lot of people call it a goatee. It's not. It's a Van Dyke, by the way. Just your little quiz for the day.
You heard it here.
But I mean, so when I talk about Ollie, I usually bring up Quiver as like the first book, just because that's how I got into it. Because it was a really good book, especially for TV show fans, because it kind of introduces his whole family, his whole cast, a lot of which you would recognize when you watch the show. There was some stuff that I almost expected. Like, you meet a character in Quiver named Mia Dearden, who I immediately was like, oh, Thea. It has to be, because Ollie doesn't actually have a sister in the comics.
Spoilers.
Sorry. but you get that exposure. And then you also get characters like Roy. So Red Arrow / Arsenal / Speedy /
whatever name it was.
Everything he's going by these days. And then Connor, who I am eagerly awaiting them to do something with in the TV show. I love Connor Hawke. I don't think he's in the New 52 anymore, which makes me sad.
You never know. They could bring him back. He could just pop up on the show and they'll be like, well, he's not in the comics, so we can play with him.
I hope so. And I also loved, because Quiver is actually written by Kevin Smith, like Kevin Smith movies, Kevin Smith. And then Phil Hester is the artist on that. And he does a ton from then on, because this book starts where Green Arrow had died, but it's superhero comics, so he's back. And Phil Hester was drawing a lot of it from then on, and he kind of became like the Green Arrow artist to me for a long time, until I was able to branch out into other series or other books, like Green Arrow Year One, which I was really surprised and impressed with the first season of Arrow, because it has a lot of the same tone and atmosphere, though very different. But for Year One, it actually was a bit of an homage to that, and I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's written by Andy Diggle, and I wonder if that's where they got Digg's name.
Oh my God, sure. maybe it was. I would not be shocked. I think Andy Diggle also did The Losers. I think that was Andy Diggle and Jock. That's one of my favorite comics.
Oh, Jock did the art on Year One too. I guess they team up a lot.
Maybe they did.
Jock, who did Witches, which I love. And then when it comes to the social issues, he's actually, Green Arrow is really well known for that. Because admittedly, originally, he was a Batman ripoff. He had the Arrow car.
The Arrow cave.
The Arrow cave. The aeroplane.
Everything was beautiful. Very themed. Very impressed with. I wonder if any of like the early, like 50s, 60s DC artists were also like Disney Imagineers in like a later life.
If only in their hearts they were.
Just such good theming. We're like really spot on. Oh, there was this one issue of Batman. I can't remember which one it is, but I read it because I read it when I was like a 5 year old, and Joker had a Joker mobile, and it was like the most magical thing I've ever seen in my life.
There's an episode of Batman Brave and the Bold where they race, and everyone has like a themed car.
Yes.
It's very wacky racers. It's good stuff. Think about that episode forever. But when it, for Green Arrow, he actually became kind of more his own character when they started doing the social issue aspect and the fight for the little guy, the very blue collar. When he was calling the police officers blue fascists was a thing. Oh, Ollie. But there were a few books that really hit that home. The Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Green Arrow, Green Lantern collection.
Oh, which, I love that.
Oh, it's so good. It has the infamous My Ward is a Junkie cover, which I'm not saying I have a print hanging on my wall of that cover, but I do.
But it's more than that. So that book is basically like a buddy road trip with the two green themed heroes in the Justice League. And they just kind of like set off. They're like, we're going to find America. And we're like, yes, thank you.
Somebody has to find it. It shouldn't have worked either, because it was these two angry, horrible temper, one conservative like army dude, one crazy liberal old coot. And somehow it did. A lot of people don't actually know that they did it again.
Really?
Yeah, they did another Green Arrow, Green Lantern team up road trip. Covering social issues, it was actually between Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern and Connor Hawke as Green Arrow.
Really?
And it's adorable because they're both really chill.
That sounds super adorable. Because wasn't Kyle like an art student or something?
Yes, he's my favorite. He's like Green Lantern.
He's like a goofy art student who's like a pretty boy. Also,
he does he does cartoons for I think comic newspaper strips.
Oh, he's out of a job.
I know. Poor Kyle. We still love you.
It's okay. He's got a webcomic now.
I'm sure. Absolutely. He's going to be tabling at SPX.
He's found a new life. We should check out his Tumblr later.
TheRealGreenLantern.tumblr.com.
What does Connor do? What is Connor up to in that one?
Oh, Connor. Because Connor is...
Is he like a professional vigilante?
Connor's a monk.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because Connor's kind of the antithesis of everything that is Ollie. He's very calm. I think he's vegan or vegetarian.
Okay.
He went to the same monastery that Ollie trained at, just to kind of be closer to him, because they didn't really meet until much later in life, like way, way later. Like Connor was a full grown adult at the time, and he really wanted to live up and meet his father, which is a little bit of a disappointment.
Ooh, spoilers. I don't think we mentioned that Connor Hawke is Oliver Queen's son, but now you know.
By the way. So he's kind of trying to follow in his father's footsteps, but also find himself.
Aww.
And he's doing a lot of that with Kyle, and they're also on the hunt to find Kyle's father. So it's something that Connor has experience with.
It's like a legacy road trip.
It is.
That is so precious.
It's beautiful. No one I know remembers that happened. I mean, definitely the original was so groundbreaking. I think this one was more just kind of for fun. But it had a lot of the same elements, so I enjoyed it. And then you can't talk about Green Arrow without talking about Longbow Hunters, which is Mike Grell. One of the most important, if I'm tying it to the show, one of the most important things I can mention is that this is when Ollie and Black Canary moved to Seattle. And they opened up a florist shop.
Sherwood Florist?
Yep. Which is actually an Easter egg in one of the Arrow TV show episodes. They're just panning past this one spot, and the sign says Sherwood Florist. And
I definitely saw that and freaked out. I said, I know that.
And it was beautiful. But Longbow Hunters, Mike Grell, it's fantastic. It still covers a lot of the same social issue aspect. It's Oliver and Dinah, because she's not Laurel Dinah Lance in the comic. She's Dinah Lance. And it's Ollie kind of trying to be a monogamous family man which he's not that great at, but they're very sweet together. And I don't want to spoil anything from this series, but it's really good. It's really gritty. I would compare it similar to the darker tones that Arrow has. So if you're going to pick up anything, and that's a standalone too, it's I think 3 issues. So you can just pick it up all in one go.
I think a lot of the stuff that you've been talking about stands alone pretty well. So all good jumping on points for people who aren't familiar with the character but want to get into it.
Absolutely. Those are actually my top favorites. So I was going to rank my Green Arrow picks for you. I would list all those.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you for sharing your Green Arrow thoughts. I know
I have so many.
So many thoughts on Oliver and his little twirly Van Dyke.
Thank you for the proper term. Well, because I've got Legends of Tomorrow is also coming out.
Oh, yeah.
At some point. I don't know when.
That's coming out real soon. That's going to tie into the same film universe as Arrow and The Flash and Vixen on CW Seed. And why don't you tell us why you're excited for Legends of Tomorrow?
Because it's almost the Justice League International TV show that I've been craving. Or it might be. Because it's got Rip Hunter, who I never, ever thought I think I would see live action.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not as Rory from Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, appropriately, Rip Hunter is a time traveler, so that was just brilliance in casting.
Finally, he gets to become a Time Lord. I'm still holding out for Booster Gold and Ted Kord. Forever holding out.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like they took Ray Palmer, the Atom, and kind of gave him characteristics of the Blue Beetle, so maybe that will be the new Booster Gold-Blue Beetle duo for the new generation.
I'd be cool with that, too.
That would be cool, too. I'm excited to see Hawkgirl. I mean, in the comics, the whole, like, Hawkman-Hawkgirl thing sometimes gets a little complicated, but I always feel like she translates well to shows. I really liked her in Justice League Unlimited.
Me too. So. That's actually my only experience with her is JLU.
I had further experience because I started getting into comics right when DC was doing the Infinite Crisis stuff. And one of the miniseries leading up to that was the Ranthanagar War miniseries. So you bet I read that and now know a lot about the Thangarians and the Rannians. So you talked to me about, well, no, maybe not now, but if you had talked to me a few years ago about like Adam Strange or Carter Hall or any of those people, I would have been like, yeah, I know what you're about.
But not now.
Now I'm a little rusty. Because like also there were like 2 Hawk Girls.
I don't know. You introduced me as a DC expert, but
there's a point. There's like corners of the universe that are yet to be explored. It takes a while to get through all this stuff. We don't have time for any letters today. You can always write to us at letters@comixology.com. But I did have a tweet that I wanted to talk about because it ties into what we've been talking about thematically.
It's a very Kara tweet, too.
It's a very me tweet. So from Ryan Garcia at So Me Geek Lawyer. Didn't want to write 2 weeks in a row, but know you're chatting Arrow today. Maybe some flashbook recs for show fans, which I immediately favorited because I love the Flash show so much because the Flash is just one of my favorite characters. I have to admit, my favorite part about Flash is actually the Rogues because the Rogues are like the Lost Boys from Neverland, except they grew up. But, instead of like admitting defeat and actually growing up, they're like, let's put on costumes and rob stuff so we don't have to do actual real person things. So it's basically like all these bros hanging out like in costumes and they're all about like their leader, Captain Cold, is all about like the Rogues, like honor and their family and stuff.
You
like,
say leader, I hear dad.
He really is the dad. He is such the dad. They've only ever had like 2 or 3 girls in the group, which like should bother me, but it kind of like works with their dynamic because they are so bro-y and they shine when they're being really bro-y. The first like rogue who was a woman is the Golden Glider, who is Captain Cold's sister.
We've seen in the show.
We have seen in the show, and I'm so excited because in the comics she has a thing for one of the rogues whose name is the Top. Roscoe Dillon. I love their names. And I'm really excited for him to show up at some point if he does, because his costume is the most ridiculous. It's like all these yellow and green stripes.
It's more ridiculous than the boomerang pajamas.
Yeah. Okay. More ridiculous than Captain Boomerang. But I just love the Rogues and like how they interact. So when they just started out with Captain Cold and Heat Wave on the show, I got really excited because those two characters I always considered to be like the dad and the mom of the group. So now that mom and dad are here, now we can get all the kids. And actually one of my favorite Rogues stories that you can read in comic form is we actually recently got this on Comixology, and I know because I have been like stalking our systems to look for it, is the Rogue's Revenge miniseries. It was a Final Crisis tie-in. I think it would help if you're familiar with Final Crisis, but I don't think it's necessary. It's three issues, and basically the Rogues are, everyone's after the Rogues because everyone thinks that they were like part of the murder of the Flash, and they're like on the run. Captain Cold's like, okay, this is a mess and we are getting revenge. So they go to get revenge on the people who have messed up their lives. But what I like about it is that it's a nice self-contained look at how the Rogues interact. And I think it's one of the best examples of that kind of that family mentality that I think really is their strength as a villain team. In terms of Flash comics, I like all the kind of goofy Barry Allen Flash comics from like pre-80s when he was like facing all these Rogues, and all the issues are really more like one-shots. So you could pick up like any of them depending on what cover appealed to you, and you would have a good time. You would sit down just for a few pages and be like, and now you're fighting the Pied Piper, and now you're fighting the Trickster, and everything's adorable and colorful. Oh, Rainbow Raider. Anytime he fights Rainbow Raider, Roy G. Bivolo, the Rainbow Raider, is a magical time. There's like one or two where Booster Gold faces off against the Rainbow Raider. And it is the best. In terms of the Flash, actually one of the more modern stories that I really liked with the Flash was New Frontier.
Oh yeah.
From a few years ago. Darwin Cook, absolutely gorgeous art, very like retro pinup style.
They did a movie on that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an animated movie. And so it's about like a lot of the Justice League members like saving the world, etc. But the parts with Barry Allen, the Flash, are just so adorable. And you like see him interacting with Iris, and you see like how much he loves her. And it's really well done.
That's very sweet.
So those are my picks.
Oh, there's also there's tie-in comics for both Flash and Arrow. So if you're like you're waiting for the new seasons to start, they do have ones that are based fully off the TV shows that you can also read.
Yeah, those are digital first too, right?
I think they are.
Yeah. We'll throw some of those in the show notes too. So thank you all for tuning in for our special Green Arrow Adventure Hour.
Every hour of my day is the Green Arrow Adventure Hour. Oh, I almost forgot. For Matt, this one goes out to Matt, that I did watch Stephen Amell at SummerSlam, and it was beautiful. But that's all I have to say about that.
Somewhere on his vacation, Slim is crying right now. Tears of joy running down his face, and he doesn't know why, but now he will. So, JK, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Everyone, enjoy your comics, and don't forget to write to us, letters@comixology.com.
Bye, guys.